We stay ready.
Let's walk this thing down real quick and get rid of any shreds of thinking that we may have been able to have changed any of this. This is a result of our alcoholism. If I couldn't see the truth about the first drink, then I'm going to take it. If I couldn't see the truth about it, I'm going to end up drunk. And when I'm drunk, I do things that are outside my value system and they may be inappropriate. I had no control over that. If I follow that right on down, I had no control over that. But now that I'm beginning to know better, I can do better if I'm willing. But guilt has really no part in this. You want to read the promise?
Yeah, in a minute. There's a place out at, on I-20 going out toward Augusta called the Rock Eagle. And they have a convention out there every year. I went one year. And there's a statue type thing laying on the ground there. And you walk up to the fence and you look at it and it's a pile of rocks. That's all it is just a pile of rocks. But they've built a little platform there where you climb up on this platform about, I guess, 30 feet in the air, and you look back down and it is a rock eagle. But you can't see it standing on the ground looking at it. And when I'm first coming in this program, I can't see the benefits of doing step 9 and being free from alcohol. Because here we are at step 9, when we've completed step 9, we're free from alcohol. We've taken on the greatest responsibility that any human being could ever take on in their entire life. From now on, we are going to be responsible for the way we feel and the way we think. We've got a process that we can use that no longer requires me to blame it on them. Because I finally found out who them was. Me all the time. Me all the time. Now we got steps 10, 11, and 12 to cover. And if we had a maintenance program or an aftercare program that in AA, that would be what it would be, 10, 11, and 12. Because in 10 and 11, we're going to be talking about practicing the principles that we've learned how to use in steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. I'm going to read the promises.
These all deal with our thinking.
Yeah,
they have anything to do with our pocketbooks, our relationships, or anything else. They all deal with our thinking.
They all deal with the mind. If you are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. I believe the word serenity simply means now that's the way it's always supposed to have been. And sometimes I realize that. Sometimes things are just exactly the way they were always supposed to be. Now they don't stay that way. Because the human ego comes back and messes it up. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, which is a spiritual experience, sometimes slowly, which is a spiritual awakening. They will always materialize if we work for them. Now there's a guarantee, isn't it? If we work for them, these things will come true. It came true for the first people. It comes true for people in Alcoholics Anonymous today. So it'll have to come true if we work for them. This thought brings us to step 10. Go ahead, Rich.
which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. We've had a spiritual awakening. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Now, this is the step that I used to think that I did in the morning or did in the evening, but this is what I believe is my walking around step. This is that process continually going around so that I can immediately identify self-centered fear. Charlie likes to talk about how he's got the chart for the fourth step tattooed on the front lobe of his brain. And immediately when he begins to get uncomfortable, he turns to the proper page and writes down what it is or who it is that he thinks is causing this problem. And this is what I'm going to be asked to do right here in step 10. It's just a reminder to keep on doing what I've learned to do in my first attempt. It says continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear.
Step four.
Exactly. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them.
Step 6 and 7.
We discuss them with someone immediately.
Step 5.
And make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone.
Step 8 and 9.
Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And that would be part of 12 there.
Mm-hmm.
And here is what I find to be the most fantastic promises in this book. A friend of mine started counting promises in this book one time, and he got to about 160 or 70, and he lost count. And I think every time he goes through it, there's a different amount because of the way the book reads. But it says, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We have been restored to right thinking when it comes to alcohol. We know that it makes us sick, and so therefore we just simply choose to say no. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see how that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
What is the problem now that's been removed?
The obsession.
Yeah, the thinking that precedes the taking of the next first drink has been changed. Automatically been changed. We didn't even know we was working on that, did we? Let's go back over here to page 45 just a minute. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find the power greater than yourself which will solve your problem. The thinking that precedes the taking of the next first drink. And we do these things, these simple things really, not easy sometimes, but simple things, in those 40 pages. And we have the promises. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither we are avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. Simple, but not easy. A price had to be paid.
And God's a practical God. It's not a mystical thing that we're doing here. Since I had become everything I despised in a human being, I was usually always restless, irritable, and discontented. But now that I'm beginning to treat people a little bit differently, and I'm beginning to look at the truth about myself, I don't feel that way most of the time. And that is how God is restoring me to right thinking when it comes to drinking. In other words, I just won't become restless, irritable, and discontented enough to believe that lie. And that's how God does these things. Go ahead, Bob.
It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do. For alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. Now, what part of alcoholism are we not cured of?
The physical allergy.
The physical allergy. If we convinced ourselves, even after recovering in the mental, the thought that overcomes all other thoughts, we've recovered in that area, but if we convinced ourselves 20 years down the road that we could have a drink of liquor, we would still have the allergy of the body. It's not been... What we really have is a daily reprieve. Now this next line here, they added, somebody added, but it wasn't in the original manuscript, contingent upon the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Now somebody had already asked Bill Wilson, how does an alcoholic stay away from a drink? And he doesn't say by maintaining their spiritual condition. He says we have to grow away from taking that drink. You know, I can't stay sober on what I did and what I knew 5 years ago, 2 years ago. I have to continue to grow by doing things like this, by talking to you about what this program is about, by talking to you about spirituality, and by practicing these principles. I have to grow away from taking that drink. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? 10-step prayer here now. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish, because it is the proper use of the will. If you'll notice, we got our sanity back on page 84. We get our thinking back on page 85. That's one thing about, you know, I hear people talk about step 3, turning their life and their will over to the care of God as they understand it. We're just turning it over for it to be cleaned up and straightened out, and then we get it back. And then we're given a process to keep it straightened out. It's not like I'm being God directed in everything, because some things I have to make a decision myself. Now I ask God's guidance and God's help, but I don't always know that I get it, but I have to do something. All right? Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions,
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9,
we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action.
They're going to remind me again to do this all the time.
Right? Yeah, yeah. They're not going to let you... You know, they're not going to let you say, well, I've done step 12 and I went out and carried the message. Now I'm cured and everything's cool and I don't have nothing to do. They're going to tell us that there's more action. We're going to, in every step and everything we do, there's always going to be something else to do.
Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And I wrote instructions there because I need them. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? And where did we learn to do that? Step 4. Do we owe an apology?
Step 8 and 9.
Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once?
Step 5.
Were we kind and loving toward all? In other words, was I using, practicing these principles in all my affairs? What could we have done better? Where were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others? Of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Now, these are my instructions for daily living. They're all through this book, and they're very simple, and they're usually one-liners, just like the one where it said, I avoid retaliation or argument. It tells me what to do here. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives.
Step four again.
Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. Now, we can all think about our daily lives and see where this is something that we may have practiced before, where we may be involved in some sort of task and we just can't seem to go any further. So we get up and we go outside and we take a break, just like we do here. And that, it's amazing how when we relax a little bit and ask God for a little bit of help, the right answer comes. It does for me when I choose to practice this. And I forget. I get so wrapped up in self, and I get involved in stuff. And my stuff is either broken down or it's not paid for. And I forget to go right back to these simple directions and use them. And then I can understand the truth about how to fix the stuff and how to not be afraid of work and somehow go to work and pay for it. It says what used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. After we've practiced, it becomes second nature if we keep doing it and stay in shape. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. Now they're going to give me some instructions for prayer, because I've never really been very good at it, and they know that, and they've given me a lot of little one-line prayers with every step throughout the book. And they're going to give me some suggestions right here so that I might be able to form a prayer life. And I've kept mine simple. I have not, I'm usually pretty grandiose, but I have not gotten grandiose in my prayer life. I keep it just as simple today as when I first started using it. It says, we usually conclude this period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be. How much more simple can it be? That we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. It wouldn't do me any good to pray for a wave runner or a jet ski, but it might do me a lot of good to pray for an intuitive thought on how I could go to work and buy one. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. And I'm more able to do that now that I've gotten some of self out of me and I'm able to look at the truth. I'm able to see that the only thing wrong with religions was my reaction to them. I can see where these people have been using their program and it's been working for them just fine for years and years and years. It has always been my reaction, but now I'm beginning to learn to act upon the truth instead of reacting to the lies.
We sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. The prayer of St. Francis. Attend to that also, not in place of. I was at a convention, a seminar, and they were having a discussion of step 11, and the whole discussion went that they said the prayer of St. Francis three times a day, and that's how they practiced step 11. And I couldn't stand it, of course. I had to tell them that that's just not what step 11 is. According to the textbook, Alcoholics Anonymous. And they told me right quick, and in no uncertain terms, you do it your way, we'll do it ours. So again, I had to just hush. I didn't want to. I wanted to just jap slap them, you know, and make them see what they was doing wrong. But it just don't work that way, you know. People have to see. They can see when they can see, and they can hear when they can hear. And you know, I don't claim to know, and I don't claim to be right. I do claim to have enough sense to know what Alcoholics Anonymous says. I left a meeting one time, and this young fella asked me a question. He said, "I need to ask you something." And I said, "All right." So he asked me the question, and I said, "Well, let's go see what Alcoholics Anonymous says about that." And he said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Let's go get the book and look it up and see what Alcoholics Anonymous says about that." And he said, "I knew you was going to say that. I knew you was going to say that." He said, "I don't want to know what that old book says. I want your opinion." And I said, "My opinion is not going to do you any good, son. I couldn't live on it for 39 years. I couldn't stay sober on it for 5. It's not going to do you any good." I said, I'm the world's worst about giving it to you, but I'll tell you right up front, it ain't going to do you no good because it didn't even help me. My opinion. Let's go see what Alcoholics Anonymous says about that. Apparently, I didn't have any of this information. I didn't know any of these things when I got here. And, you know, I've learned them now. So there's no sense me going back to my opinion to tell you when you ask me a question. I'm often asked, "Why do you carry the book with you when you go to..." You know, I went over to East Marietta one time, and they said, "There's old Railroad Bob, got that old book with him." And I said, yeah. And they said, "Why do you carry that book?" I said, "Somebody might ask me something. I don't want to hurt nobody no more. I don't want to kill people by giving them my opinion that I couldn't live on."
I can misuse this book, too. Any book can be misused. It says in there, just as he suggested also, there, I remember taking the passages that says, "Be quick to see where others were right." But I was using that out of context before I had taken the steps. There's a lot of suggestions in here that tell me to seek solutions to some of my other problems, possibly. But thereafter, after I've identified my problem as it pertains to alcohol, and that I've taken some steps to have that problem removed. So there is certainly, this is in order. It's important for me not to run out and be making ninth step amends before I know why I'm willing to do it and before I know, have any idea what it is I'm about. So the order is very important. And then there are, in the last chapters that we won't cover, there are some very definite and valuable suggestions about how to use these principles in our daily lives. And they include a lot more things. It says, "As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, 'Thy will be done.' We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does." And there was one other small paragraph in the original manuscript that simply said, "Try it." We alcoholics are undisciplined. This is a very important paragraph for me because it puts in a nutshell what has happened to me over the last few steps. We are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. This is how God removes the obsession for me to drink, but I have to do the work. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. And after Bob talks and we take a break, then I'd like to touch on 12. I think we'd like to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, y'all want to take another little break?
Yeah.
We're going to go to 12.
12:30.
Well, if we make it to 12:30, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Charles will tell us when to quit.
We ain't gonna make him quit.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
On the air.
On the air, all right. We have to quit the foolishness now. We're on the air. Well, being as we're on the air and we're on the tape, we've got a celebrity with us today who's celebrating her third anniversary. Beth got her third year chip this morning. And, you know, it's going to say in here that one of the rewards of being in Alcoholics Anonymous is to watch other people grow. And I've been very privileged to watch her grow for 3 years. And it really is, you know, when you see people and they begin to look right here, Dave, they begin to look different right here. And you can tell that they came here and they heard something and something happened. They came here, they heard something and something happened. And that's what I think, that when we grow away from a drink, that's what that means. We continue coming here, we continue hearing something, we continue doing something, and something continues to happen. Happy, joyous, and free, sober, free from alcohol.
I've known some people who had 3 years, 2 years, 1 year. One of them was here yesterday, one of my friends from East Tennessee. And they're just a joy to behold, because they have quietly sat down and identified their problem, and they understand that it's not their fault, and they're doing something about it, and they're out here helping other people. And their sobriety is every bit as good as sobriety can get. We can have, see, that's the beauty of this thing, is we can have the whole deal immediately. It's not something that has to come with seniority or with time or with anything like that. It comes with understanding and believing and doing some things and having some faith. And then we can be just as sober as somebody who may have many, many, many years. These people are just, to me, an absolute joy to be around. And thank you for being here. Go ahead.
Practical experience. Now, this is not only a practical experience, it's a very practical program. We do something and something happens. We ask for something to be removed, and that is removed, and something's added. So it's a very practical program. A practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion.
Direction.
Yeah, direction. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I've had a spiritual awakening, a personality change sufficient to stay sober. And I know I have, because I feel things that I never used to be able to feel. And the practical side of that is that I don't have to drink alcohol anymore. So something has happened for me to change. It works when other activities fail. Carry this message to other alcoholics. What message?
This message.
This message. You can help when no one else can. Now, you know, there's diseases out there that will kill people, and they do. And there's not a thing in the world you and I can do about it. But there is one disease that kills more people probably. If we got down to the core issue of why these people died, alcoholism may kill more people than anything. And you and I have been given the power to do something about that. We've been given the power to recover from the hopeless condition of the mind and body and carry that message of how we did that and how God did that for us to another person suffering from the same disease. Now, I just wonder if we went down to the office where I go, how do you pronounce that, oncology, if we went down there to that Monday morning and just made the announcement if they were willing to go to a meeting and study a program and look at what their problem was and look at a simple solution and a simple process to go through, I wonder how many of them would come here if they thought they could use this program to cure cancer.
The place would be covered up. We'd have to have a guard at the door.
And we have been given the privilege of recovering from a hopeless condition of mind and body, and it behooves us to carry that message to another alcoholic. We have to do that. If I'm to stay sober and continue to grow away from taking that next first drink, I have got to practice these principles and carry this message to other alcoholics. And the girl yesterday, she's not here today, but she asked me a question. She said, how do you handle it when you go to meetings and talk about the 12-step program as it is in the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous and people make fun of you? I said, I just have to let them make fun of me because I have to do what I have to do. Bullshit and poetry wouldn't keep me sober, and I don't believe bullshit and poetry will keep any real alcoholic sober. So we need, you know, it says in the doctor's opinion, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. That's the reason I say I'm a real alcoholic, because if I understand that I am a real alcoholic, then I understand that I have to have a real program of recovery. I have to recover from the disease of alcoholism, and then I have to carry that message. Because if I don't carry the message, I've lost the biggest part of it. Life will take on a new meaning, and that's true. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And you know, every now and then I get to see something that brings this home to me. When I can see a guy that I don't know that I gave him much of a chance of ever recovering. And I went to a meeting a couple of Sunday mornings ago, and he's sitting out from the swing, and he's got a newcomer out there, and he's got the book open, and he's explaining the doctor's opinion to him. And I just wanted to just clap. Just to see other people that I've been given the privilege to have some sort of influence with carrying this message. And to see them in the parking lot talking to each other, you know. And to see them sponsoring people who has 3 years sobriety. You don't want to miss this. You don't want to miss it. And I damn near did. I just almost missed it. Because I wasn't willing to be different than I've ever been in my life. I just almost missed it. All right.
We've been talking about this being a spiritual piece of literature and how, if we read it again and again, it changes. It changes on us. Now, if you want to look at a chapter that's going to change on you, this is the one that will change. Because with every individual that we work with down through the years, the instructions are in here for working with that individual. Now, on the first reading, you could say, well, no, they can't be. But I guarantee it that they're in here. And the first thing I need to do when somebody approaches me is say, yeah, we'll talk and we'll take a look at these steps. But please read this again and again. I know that I have to because I make a lot of mistakes. There is two people working when somebody asks for help. That's God and me, if they've asked me. And I used to try to do God's job, and this book tells me which is which in every case. It tells me what to say. It tells me what not to say, when to say it, how to say it, if I'll just look. So we're not going to have time to read a great deal of the of this chapter, but it's all devoted not only to how to help another individual, but how to be a little bit humble myself. All of the following chapters, even though they may be addressed to the wives, the valuable information is in there for me. Even though it may be addressed to the employer, the practice of these principles in all my affairs is discussed in the following chapters. Charlie told me one morning, said, Butch, he said, if you're having trouble practicing these principles in all your affairs, he said, you may have too damn many affairs. And some days I realize that is probably the truth. It says, perhaps you are not acquainted with any drinkers who want to recover. And we know where to find them these days. They come to the clubs and they're in the treatment centers. And even though treatment centers have got their own agenda, I still go to a treatment center and talk about this book, because that's my responsibility. Not to judge treatment centers, but to talk about this book. And if they'll invite me in there and gather up 15 people to listen to me, then that's my responsibility to be right there. Now that's just for me. Not to worry about what's wrong, but to see about what's right. It says, you can easily find some by asking a few doctors, ministers, priests, or hospitals. They will be only too glad to assist you. Don't start out as an evangelist or reformer. Unfortunately, a lot of prejudice exists. You will be handicapped if you arouse it. Ministers and doctors are competent, and you can learn much from them if you wish. But it happens that because of your own drinking experience, you can be uniquely useful to other alcoholics. So cooperate, never criticize. To be helpful is our only aim.
Joe said used to, when he first started, Joe McQuaney out in Arkansas, said when he first started, you know, he'd go on them 12-step calls, and he'd go in them rooms, and a guy would be piled up in the chair, you know, just green and stinking. And he'd say, boy, what you've got to have is God in your life, you know. And he said, I'm so glad that they didn't tell me that when, you know. We have to start off getting them to understand, first of all, we're instructed by the program itself to tell them about our own step one, how we were powerless over alcohol. And because we were powerless over alcohol, our lives was unmanageable. If you can't drink and you can't quit drinking, your life will be unmanageable. And the answer that we found, you know, we tell them about our own drinking and the trouble that our drinking got us into. That's the purpose of sharing our experience, strength, and hope in the disease of alcoholism, that they can relate to the problem. And if they can begin to relate to the problem, they might just begin to relate to the solution. All right?
I'm going to hit some high spots here because it is such a long chapter. But these are just instances where I get specific instructions on how to work with people. On page 90, it says, when you discover a prospect for Alcoholics Anonymous, find out all you can about him. In other words, that tells me to listen. Listen carefully. Let that man know that I'm willing to listen. If he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste time trying to persuade him. Very specific instructions. And we'll know. We'll know if he wants a banker, a whiner. We'll know. I'm supposed to listen carefully to find that out. You may spoil a later opportunity. This advice is given for his family also. If there's any indication that he wants to stop, have a good talk with the person most interested in him, usually his wife. Get an idea of his behavior, his problems, his background, the seriousness of his condition, and his religious leanings. You need this information to put yourself in his place, to see how you would like him to approach you if the tables were turned. Sometimes it is wise to wait till he goes on a binge. I'm going to skip down. If he does not want to see you, never force yourself upon him. And these are the mistakes. The reason I'm pointing these out are these are all the mistakes that I've made. Usually the family should not try to tell your story. Now the family usually tries to get me to fix somebody, and that's the family is the one that I have to tell, I'm sorry, I'll be glad to help him when he wants help. When your man is better, the doctor might suggest a visit from you. Though you've talked with the family, leave them out of the first discussion. Under these conditions, your prospect will see he is under no pressure. These are important things when it comes to dealing with psychology and human nature. It says, when he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were Don't tell him how much you know now. Tell him how little you knew then, because that's where he is. How you finally learned that you were sick, the doctor's opinion. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. We talked about those. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree, that obsession that it blocks out all other thoughts. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. On over on the next page, it says, tell him exactly what happened to you. That's in squiggly writing. Not what his problem is, but what happened to you. Make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, and that he live by spiritual principles. And this is the truth we're telling these people. I cannot avoid telling a man the truth just because of my poor reaction to talk about God. That was my reaction, not his. I have no idea how he feels about it, and he may not either, because I know that when I got here, I didn't even know what honesty was. So, as I said, the main thing is for me to keep me out of this, and certainly never begin to take responsibility for anybody else's well-being or their sobriety and follow these directions. And that's the best way for me not to begin to take that responsibility, is to follow the directions. Is that right, Bob?
I guess. Sounds good to me.
It works for me.
Yeah, it works. In the old days, they'd go see a prospect. Two of them would go see a prospect. And if they decided... If you see, this was written in 1939. These instructions were written. They're still good, but they were written in 1939, before all the treatment centers and all the meetings that we have today and all of the publicity that Alcoholics Anonymous gets and all the acceptance that Alcoholics Anonymous gets. That just simply was not true in 1939. They'd go see a prospect, and if they were satisfied that he was a real alcoholic, they had to be satisfied that he was. Then they'd take him to where the meeting was, but he didn't get to go to the meeting. They'd take him in another room, put him on his knees, and make him shell the corn. I mean, they'd make him say, they'd make him do step three right then. They'd ask him, are you ready to quit forever? And then they'd put him on his knees and make him say that prayer. And then if they were satisfied then that he is a real alcoholic, then they'd take him, then they'd let him go to a meeting. Going to a meeting must have been a privilege. You know, not like it is today. We've got people running here, and the courts send them, and got no problem with that. However you get here is how you get here. Your prospect may belong to a religious denomination. His religious education and training may be far superior to yours. And I've run into that. I talked to a guy, somebody called me and told me to go to the house place. There was a guy over there that was in trouble with drinking, and I went over there, and there he was, sitting there just stinking and green. And I said, are you ready to quit drinking? He said, I've got to quit drinking. I said, that's not what I ask you. I ask you, are you ready? Do you think you can quit drinking? Are you ready to quit? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, we do have a program here that if taking this program, if you practice this program, you won't want to drink anymore. He said, but you don't understand. I am a man of God. I said, well, I am too. You know, I felt like if he was, I probably was too. And he was drunk. So I said, well, I am too. He said, you mean you're a minister? I said, no, but I'm a child of God. And he said, yeah, but you don't understand. I am a minister. I said, ministers get drunk. We have several of them pass through here. Some of them got sober. In that case, he is going to wonder how you can add anything to what he already knows. Now, right here, to me, is the most dangerous situation I could find myself in. What I already know. A fellow told me not too long ago that he said, I didn't have any trouble with step three because I knew God when I got here. He hadn't been here a week. He already knew God when he got here. And I said, boy, I'm glad I didn't. I am so glad that I did not know God. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not, and I am so grateful for that. Because if I had known God, I could have never known God. If I already knew that I knew, then I couldn't. You know, when you're in that situation, when you get to Alcoholics Anonymous, you just turn to that. Just turn to it. And you think you already know a power greater than yourself, which will restore you. You know, I don't know. Where do you go from there? Where do you go? Have to relearn, don't you? But he will be curious to learn why his own convictions have not worked and why yours seem to work so well. He may be an example of the truth that faith alone is insufficient. Faith without action is dead. If we're not doing something about what we believe in or what we have faith in, then it's dead. We just have faith. To be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish, constructive action. Let him see that you are not there to instruct him in religion. Admit that he probably knows more about it than you do, but call to his attention the fact that however deep his faith and knowledge, he could not have applied it or he would not drink. I used to be the sponsor of a young priest, an Episcopal priest. He called me his spiritual advisor. And I didn't understand that, you know. I hadn't at that time separated spirituality and religion. And I thought, now here's a guy trained in religion, knows all there is to know about religion, and he's calling me his spiritual advisor. But spiritual advisor today, I mean spirituality today means that I've just simply found a way that I can live happy, joyous, and free with me. Doesn't really have anything to do with organized religion. Although I have nothing against organized religion, I just don't seem to be able to participate in it. But I know there are good people. And this same priest told me that he said some people are called to God through the churches. And some people like you are called to God through things like Alcoholics Anonymous, working with people who have the same problem you have. And I can live with that. I like that. All right.
Well, he's thinking, there's one or two things that I've thought of that I hear people say, are we going to have any fun? Well, I can assure you that I have laughed more over the truth than I ever did over my thinking. I've had more fun in these gatherings. I believe a meeting is set aside to teach and learn the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. The fellowship that grows up around that is, I have found to be amazing. The time that I spent, these friends that came down, we had dinner last night, and they were going to the race this weekend. They changed their trip to come by here and to do this for a couple of days. But the truth is a lot funnier than anything that I ever had before. The camaraderie and the joyousness are unbelievable now that I'm doing it this way rather than based on my thinking the way I used to do it. All of the laughter that I used to have was probably at someone else's expense. And now I know that I can get it all free right out of my own heart. And that's how it works with me. Doing this, doing it with Bob. Bob and I we're both railroaders. But we don't hardly ever talk about the railroad. We never did railroad together. I've got some children and he's got some grandchildren, but we don't talk about that too much. We have never been friends in the conventional sense of the word. We have a love and an understanding that is deep, very deep. I can answer his questions sometimes before he asks them. And we have a lot of other things in common. We both like Tennessee football. I think he probably likes it a little bit more than I do. But he's been at it longer. He's been practicing longer than I have. But we don't talk about Tennessee football too much. Now, we've known each other for quite some time, and we're planning to try to get together to do our first Tennessee football game maybe this year. But what we do is we get together and we talk about this book, and we talk about what we can learn from it, and we have a good time and we laugh, and none of this laughter is at anyone else's expense. And I want to read, I know he's going to have something that he wants to read, and I'm going to let him finish this thing up. But there's something that I want to read that is very important that I have found this because it puts it in a nutshell. And it's on 553 if you want to read it with me. That was a very important story in helping me to deal with these resentments and to help me understand what I had been using them for. But on the last paragraph it says, this great experience... No, wait a minute, it's up above that. It says that the only real freedom a human being can ever know is doing what you ought to do because you want to do it. This great experience that released me from the bondage of hatred and replaced it with love is really just another affirmation of the truth I know. I get everything I need in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything I need, I get. And when I get what I need, I invariably find that it was just what I wanted all the time. And I wrote down there peace of mind. And it does not get any more complicated. I keep it simple. Bob?
Peace of mind. My kids always ask me what I want for Christmas or what I want for my birthday, and I always say peace of mind, you know. So my son made me a plaque with this brain on it, this rubber brain, and gave it to me last Christmas, and he said, there's your peace of mind. But I have gotten more peace of mind. You know, again and again, it's not what happens to me that bothers me, it's the way I react to it. Because things do happen to you. And I've been wrong about that track business because I was just looking here and found where it talks about track again. The men who cry for money and shelter before conquering alcohol, they're on the wrong track. And I thought that other place over there was the only place that could get it. And I'm going to read this paragraph here because I think it is important also. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth, job or no job, wife or no wife. We simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. I remember when I asked Speedy to be my sponsor in the beginning. He said, yeah, I'm going to be your sponsor, but I'm not going to. He said, you take a drink and I'm no longer your sponsor. And I said, wonder why I had to pick on the most arrogant thing in Cobb County to ask to be my sponsor. Then he said something else. He said, by the same token, when I take a drink, I'll no longer be your sponsor. And he was telling me in his own way that I couldn't depend on another human being, that I would have to learn to depend on God. Because I always, and you need to remember why Butch and I are here, and we always need to remember why we're here. We're here because we're powerless over alcohol, and because we're powerless over alcohol, our lives are unmanageable. Now, if I can't manage my life, I've got no damn business telling you how to manage yours. But I will if you talk to me long enough. I'll tell you what you need to be doing. And I may not be right, because I don't know what you need to be doing. It's my job, my responsibility, to carry this message of being powerless over alcohol, and because I'm powerless over alcohol, my life being unmanageable. That's the message I'm to carry. I came to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and found a textbook that had a program in it that explained to me why I'm powerless. It explained to me that if that's the problem, then the solution will have to be power. And I don't have it. My own mind can't fix my own mind. That I'd have to make a decision to follow a planned program of action that the first people who ever got sober consistently followed, and it worked for them. Someday we hope that Alcoholics Anonymous will help the public to a better realization of the gravity of the alcoholic problem, but we shall be of little use in our attitude is one of bitterness or hostility. Drinkers will not stand for that. After all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anyone. We have to. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a way to look back at my life, but not in anger. It's given me a way to look forward in my life, but not in fear. And it's given me a way to look around in the present in total and absolute awareness of where I am and what I'm doing. Now, 164. And we'll wind this thing up. Our work is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right. That's about the only place they talk about relationships, by the way. See to it that your relationship with God is right, and great events will come to pass for you and for countless others. This is the great fact. This is the great truth for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God, and we do that in steps 1, 2, and 3. Admit your faults to your fellows, to Him and to your fellows, and we do that in 4, 5, 6, and 7. Clear away the wreckage of your past. We do that in steps 8 and 9. Give freely of what you find and join us, 10, 11, and 12. And we shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us if you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you. And keep you until then. May the love of God, as you understand God, and may the spirit of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous be with you now and forevermore, one day at a time. Thank you.
Thank you.